facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A tremendous Thursday to you. So glad you're with me today on the show. 1-888-914-9149 is a toll-free line to call in on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. 888-914-9149. You can also follow me on Twitter. You can hit me up at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We have a show account as well, at Cale Clark Show. We have one for the Faith Explained program, too. It's at Faith Explained. And you can email me, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Well, I don't want to waste any more time because we've got a very special guest on the program today, somebody who I've wanted to talk to on the show for a really, really long time. My guest today is the Venerable Fulton J. Sheen Fellow of Popular Culture at the Word on Fire Institute. He is an author and a former Anglican cleric who came into full communion with the Catholic Church on New Year's Day, January the 1st, 2019. He's an Ivy League guy, too. He earned an MDiv from Yale University and an MPhil. That's a Master in Studies of Dr. Phil. No, I'm only kidding. It's a Master's in Philosophy from Oxford University. He's a convert from the Anglican Church, which is also known, of course, as the Episcopalian Church in the United States. Andrew Pettiprin is my guest today. Andrew, thanks for taking the time. Good to run you down. How are you?
Cale, I'm great. It's a pleasure to finally get to talk to you on the air.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked about a lot of your writings on the program in the past, and today we're going to talk about a new post you're going to be coming out with tomorrow on Word on Fire about Midnight Mass. Nothing to do with Christmas. It's about the Netflix program that is sweeping the nation, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But I want to hear, first of all, before I say this, I just love the titles that you guys have as fellows of the Word on Fire Institute. Dr. Holly Ordway, who's a good friend of the program, she's been on before. She's the Cardinal Francis George Fellow of Faith and Culture. And you are the Fulton J. Sheen Fellow of Popular Culture. I'm trying to convince the top brass at Relevant Radio to let me be called the Benedict XVI Fellow of Fine Bavarian Wheat Beer and Theology at Relevant Radio. But so far it's falling on deaf ears, but maybe one day.
I hope you get your title, Cale. It's an honor. It's an incredible honor for me to get to have Fulton Sheen's name in my job title. Yeah. And you know, it's actually a wonderful story that all four of my Protestant grandparents loved Fulton Sheen. Loved
him. No kidding.
I mean, they never missed him. Yeah. I mean, and this sort of goes to show you that, you know, how a great evangelist can reach people very different from him. I mean, to have a Catholic prelate on TV in full regalia saying things that were very convincing to my family members who really weren't at all interested in being Catholics says a lot. And, you know, here I am, their progeny, in full communion with the Catholic Church. So I love that. And, I admire Fulton Sheen so much, and it's an honor to have his name as part of my job.
So I take it that his name was not suggest, like you didn't come up with that yourself. They suggested that to you.
No, that's right. It basically Bishop Barron personally assigned these titles to the fellows of the Word on Fire Institute because they're people that he admires and people that he wants his apostolate, our ministry, as part of his ministry to kind of embody the spirit of. So, I really lucked out with getting Fulton Sheen.
Very providential indeed. My guest is Andrew Pettiprin from the Word on Fire Institute. I like to go back to the beginning. I like to kind of talk about their origin story. Speaking of popular culture, to use a comic book term, I'm a huge fan of comic book movies. But tell me your origin story. Where were you born, and what was your faith life like for you growing up?
Well, I was born in Plattsburgh, New York, way, way up in the North country, not too far from Canada, Cale, your land.
Close to the promised land.
Yeah, pretty close to the to the land of friendliness. I was born up there. My father was a professor at the university there in Plattsburgh, New York. And we ended up later moving to Florida, where my mother's from, and I spent most of my adolescence there and then returned there as an adult for a time. But I grew up in an evangelical home. I was baptized by a Presbyterian minister in my grandparents' house. Wow. So Yeah, very much a kind of, we had a strong kind of sense of home religion. We prayed, we sang songs and kind of read the Bible and took our faith very seriously at home as a family. Went mostly to, well, we kind of bounced around to different churches, but went to Methodist churches for a lot of the time. And then when I was 13, my parents got divorced, and that shook the faith life of our family very much. And we ended up getting connected with an evangelical megachurch in the mid-1990s, right around the time that those kinds of places were really starting to boom. And that was really starting to become the thing. So I spent some time there, but also became a bit disaffected by the faith that I encountered there, and went into a little bit of a period of wilderness time during my teen years and my college years.
Let me ask you this, Andrew. How did your parents break up when you were basically a teen? How did that impact your relationship with God at that point?
Well, it did, to be sure. My mother really was and is the one who was the engine of our family's faith life, and it was she who had kind of a crisis of faith that was connected to the breakup of her marriage to my dad. My dad was gone a lot. He had some problems, and you know, there were just all kinds of issues there. But it definitely affected my faith life, but more than anything, kind of our family faith life. Since, as I said, what the most important thing that I remember about Christianity as a kid was that it was in our home. You know, in fact, I even remember one Easter Sunday of all Sundays where we went to our Methodist church and the place was just packed to the gills. And my mother said, "Oh, no big deal. We'll just go home." You know, like we didn't really have to go to church, you know, I mean, we did because that's what you did. And we had friends there and community there. But really what mattered was that we prayed together. We read the Bible together and all of that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, I have a real heart for anyone, for young people in particular, who are the product of broken homes like I was, you know, because it really just shakes your whole foundation for your ability to trust, for your you know, your ability to just kind of develop as a person, to be a whole person. And, you know, that's been something I've had to deal with in my own life and just really come to find healing and grace in trusting in my Heavenly Father more than ever.
Yeah, that's for sure. And even though there wasn't sort of a sense of a Sunday obligation in terms of attending, as you sort of said, well, let's just go home. The family as a domestic church, you know, in so many ways, obviously informed your upbringing. And your mom was an English teacher too. How did that angle, speaking of popular culture, literature is certainly part of that. How did that inform your faith?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting part of my development, Cale, that I think helps explain where I am today with regard to being an evangelist who is very much into theology and biblical studies and articulating the faith from that perspective, but that I'm also somebody who is keenly interested in what's going on in popular culture, in film, in television, and in literature. I mean, my mother would read to us. Some of my earliest memories are from the Chronicles of Narnia, from, you know, Tolkien, and sort of the other greats like that, but also great films, Chariots of Fire, and, you know, those kinds of like inspirational films, which were certainly overtly religious in certain respects, but also were very much a part of mainstream culture as it existed at that time too. So yeah, I grew up with this keen sense of kind of an aesthetic sensibility and a desire to experience God's faithfulness through the created works of people who either knowingly or not were inspired by him.
Yeah, I love it. So if I were to say to you, the Chronic, what? Chronicles of Narnia, would you get that pop culture reference?
Actually, I don't. I think you stumped
it's a Saturday Night Live skit. That was a test. That was a test. Anyways, you'll have to Google this, but trust me, it's worth it. My guest is Andrew Petiprin, fellow of popular culture at the Word on Fire Institute. And I want to kind of fast forward just a little bit, Andrew, and talk about what led you to go to Oxford, England in 2001. It was right after 9/11, right?
It was, Cale. Yeah, I was incredibly fortunate to and blessed to have received a scholarship, the British Marshall Scholarship, to get to go and study at Oxford. I mean, it was not at all something that I anticipated I would get to do in my life, but I applied for it coming out of my undergraduate institution and was awarded it. And it was such a dream come true. And by that point, I was still working through some issues related to my faith, but I was enamored. I had always been enamored with C.S. Lewis and read him almost monastically as an undergraduate. I mean, I sort of used him as my as kind of my guide. And so when I got the opportunity to go to Oxford, I also got the opportunity to be a member of Lewis's college, Magdalen College, Oxford, and to pray in the same building where he had prayed. And indeed, I was confirmed in the Church of England and became an Anglican there at Magdalen College, Oxford, where Lewis had spent so many years writing and teaching. So it was all just such a dream come true for me. And so many things kind of came together. All these strands that that had been loose were woven together during this period of my life. And yeah, as you say, it was right after 9/11. And it was a time not only for me personally, where I was dealing with, you know, still the aftermath of my parents' divorce and trying to figure out who I was and where I was going, but also just a strange time in the life of the world. And you know, I'm sure as you know, this is something that I talk about sometimes with my younger colleagues. You know, we can say it till we're blue in the face, but those of us who were sort of alive and well before 9/11, we know the world was a different place then. And, you know, so I was just kind of dealing with this new reality and this new reality in my own heart, too. And all of that ultimately led to my receiving ordination in the Episcopal Church some number of years later. And we can get into that too, but you know, that period of my life, that Oxford time, was so crucial to my development and to the work that I get to do even now.
You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. My guest is Andrew Petiprin. And Andrew, let me ask you a little bit about the Anglo-Catholic community at Oxford. For those those who might be listening today who maybe aren't quite sure what, when you say Anglo-Catholic, is it Catholic? Is it Anglican? What does this mean? If you could just kind of give an explanation for people out there who've never heard about this movement, can you explain its origins and how you got involved with it on campus?
Sure. Well, to be honest with you, I didn't know what it was when I first encountered Anglo-Catholicism. I had certainly heard of Catholicism back in my growing up days, and I knew that I was a Protestant, but I didn't really know that there were a group of people who sort of were aspiring to Catholicism, but who were formally a part of a Protestant denomination or Protestant tradition of Anglicanism. But this tradition goes way back. I mean, it sort of depends on what person you ask, but we can certainly talk about this in terms of people like John Henry Newman and the Oxford movement that took place in the 19th century in England, centered in the university town of Oxford. And, you know, these were extremely bright individuals who were steeped in the church fathers, who were really trying to find a way forward for their national church, the Church of England, which, as we know from history, had broken away from the Roman Catholic Church in the 16th century. But they were trying to find a way forward where they could stake their claim to authentic Catholicity, even though they were out of communion with the Pope. And, you know, ultimately, someone like John Henry Newman came to decide that the branch really had been severed from the rest of the tree. Yeah. And so the path forward to being a Catholic was to just come back individually or with groups of friends or families or whatever, but to come back together and to seek to come into full communion with the Catholic Church. But there were lots of people in Newman's day who didn't make that decision, and this tradition carried on and carries on to this day. There are people in the Church of England and the Episcopal Church, the Anglican Church of Canada, and other places where there are groups of Anglicans who, you know, who still aspire to this idea that you can be a Catholic outside of full communion with the Pope. I came to a place like Newman did eventually where it just didn't make sense to me anymore. And once I really got to know some really decent and faithful and generous Catholic people who were able to sort of articulate to me what the ecumenical vision of the Catholic Church was, I found Catholicism completely irresistible. Namely, I discovered that what I had been as an Anglican wasn't nothing. That the Catholic Church wasn't asking me to say, your ministry is garbage, you know, everything you've been doing is useless and worthless. No. In fact, the Catholic Church was saying the opposite. They were in a sense screaming to me, the stuff that you're doing has so much good in it. And what you're going to find when you bring it into the fullness of communion in the Catholic Church is it's going to flourish like you can't even imagine. And that's absolutely been the case for me.
I love that. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. My guest is Andrew Petiprin. I just want to piggyback on what you've said there. And obviously, St. Cardinal Newman's feast day was just a few days ago on October the 9th. And he played a big part in my journey back to the church. And I had the benefit, I guess you could say, of being a cradle Catholic before leaving the church, becoming a Protestant minister and coming back. But reading some of Newman's stuff really pushed me over the edge to get back in the Catholic Church, and especially the letters that he wrote to his Anglican friends on the eve of his conversion were so powerful, so full of conviction. He really gave me the boost that I needed. And so I have huge respect for people who are coming from, I had the benefit of sort of being familiar with, it wasn't a strange land when I came back into the Catholic Church, but for somebody like you, who is a straight up convert to Catholicism, I so admire that because it is in some ways a real leap into the dark, especially if you're coming from a clergy background and you're going to, you know, potentially lose your livelihood. And let me ask you, were you personally afraid to convert at some level?
I was afraid. I was afraid. And, you know, a saint that was precious to me during right around the time of my conversion, in addition to St. John Henry Newman, who was canonized right around the time that I was coming into full communion with the Catholic Church, which is an incredible grace. But another saint that was precious to me was St. John Paul II for so many reasons. Mm-hmm. But one of the reasons is his famous slogan, be not afraid. I just felt, you know, knowing more and more about his story and his convictions and his courage, that I felt confident that even though I had to leave my livelihood behind, as you say, I was unemployed for 6 months, my first 6 months as a Catholic.
Wow.
Everything I had known, the ministry that I had built was gone. But it was, you know, Newman talks about this in his Apologia Pro Vita Sua, his memoir, his spiritual memoir, where, you know, of course he was tortured at the prospect of leaving Anglicanism and becoming a Catholic. But once he did it, he talks about it like being a ship that has come into port after rough seas. And that's exactly how I felt. Never for one second have I regretted my decision. And, you know, I remember another former Anglican cleric said to me one time, who he had already come into the Catholic Church before I did. And he said, Andrew, my worst day as a Catholic is better than my best day as an Anglican. And I have to say, that's just absolutely true. It is. And that's just something I want to share with cradle Catholics, just to celebrate and give thanks for the faith that you have, and just how grateful I am to you, to cradle Catholics, and to people who've been in the fullness of the faith for a long time, who get to witness to me to so many things that I still have to explore.
Oh, I just love that. Well, thank you. And you and obviously one of the great things that great graces that we have in the church is the perspective of converts. And I get asked this question all the time. Do you feel like your experiences outside of the Catholic Church kind of hurt you? I always say I learned a lot from that time, and I'm sure you'd say the same, that the ministry that you were part of as an Anglican didn't exactly hurt you. It probably gave you a great perspective coming back into the church. I certainly feel like it gives me an understanding of where people are at kind of on both sides of the fence. And we have a lot of non-Catholics. I know listening to this program right now, we have Orthodox listeners, we have Protestant listeners, and they contact me a lot. And some of them are probably even thinking about themselves, making the move, crossing the Tiber, swimming the Tiber, and becoming Catholic. What would you say to those people who are listening right now?
Well, I would say, you know, I just encourage you with all my heart to trust in the Lord where He leads. And you're absolutely right, Cale, in saying I know for sure, because I was one of them. There are people driving around in their cars right now who feel a conviction about coming into the Catholic Church. I remember, just to share one quick story with you, when I was really deep in the throes of trying to figure out whether I could take the leap and come into the Catholic Church, it was this period where I was driving around in the afternoons at this very particular time, and I would flip on the radio and I would hear this guy on the radio praying these things that sounded like praying a rosary, but I wasn't exactly sure what it was. And it was Drew Mariani praying the, wow. the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. And I prayed it with him every day, and I didn't even know what it was. And yet it was That's all incredible. A part of this stirring of my heart. So, you know, anybody listening out there, I just want to reassure you that you're on the right path, and being faithful to the Lord will be the right choice for you.
That's a great encouragement to people listening. And hey, Drew, if you're listening, if you're driving home, Drew's show was just before this one. Hopefully that's encouraging to you as well. And Andrew, you know this is going to somehow become a commercial for the Drew Mariani Show at some point. So that is an awesome anecdote. And it's so cool that you just don't know how many lives we're touching here through trying to touch people through the media. And I know that's something you're heavily involved with Word on Fire as well. Well, when we come back, we're going to have much more with our guest, Andrew Petiprin. We're going to be talking about, can we really relate faith and culture? We're going to talk about film, and we're going to talk about Midnight Mass, this Netflix sensation that's sweeping the nation. We will be back right after this, 1-888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
I had my frustrations with Anglicanism and my frustrations with the Episcopal Church in particular, but in the end, it wasn't really, our conversion wasn't really rooted in just not wanting to participate in that stuff anymore, but much more just wanting to have experience all the gifts that the church has to offer.
Hey, welcome back to the Cale Clark Show. That was a little snippet from an interview with my guest today, who I'm interviewing now, Andrew Petiprin, who is the Venerable Fulton J. Sheen Fellow of Popular Culture at the Word on Fire Institute. And you talk about running towards the Catholic Church, Andrew. When you were an Episcopalian, did you have any doubts in the back of your mind that you were in the right church? Like, we always kind of thinking, oh, maybe this isn't quite it.
I certainly did, Cale. And, you know, there were a lot of events and kind of, you know, there were these moments along the way that reinforced that here and there. Even before I was ordained in the Anglican Communion, in the Episcopal mm-hmm. Church, a big moment was the death I mentioned before of John Paul II, was the death of John Paul II. Mm-hmm. I remember watching the events unfold related to his death and the election of Pope Benedict and all of that, and just sort of standing on the cusp of moving forward with, you know, towards ordination in the Episcopal Church, and just kind of thinking, wow, this seems real. This seems like the real deal right here. So there was a moment when I sort of paused then, and there were a lot of other moments like that kind of along the journey. But, you know, for a lot of different reasons, you sort of rationalize things, or you put things out of your mind, or you sort of deal with things in different ways. And, you know, what it ultimately comes down to is that moment of inexplicable grace where, you know, the rational is sort of just subsumed under this sense of, I have to do this. I have to obey the Lord. And in a sense, then it will all come together and make sense. So, yeah, I mean, at a lot of different stages along the way, I wondered, and as is sort of intimated in that little clip that you played mm-hmm. before, you know, there were these moments in my life as an Episcopalian where I got frustrated or worried about the drift of the denomination that I belonged to. You know, this didn't seem right, or that didn't seem right, or whatever. And obviously, those were moments when I thought, oh, well, forget it, I'll just leave and go become Catholic. But ultimately, I never found that those were satisfying enough reasons. That it had to be a proactive reason. It had to be just this inexplicable call forward, rather than sort of a desire to just be done with and rid of what lay behind.
In terms of your wife's trajectory about conversion, were you guys sort of in lockstep, or was she kind of like, I don't know about this?
Well, it was certainly something that we talked about over the years, and you know, I don't want to speak for her too much, but it was it was a journey that we took together for sure. And on January 1st, 2019, when we came into full communion, she and I were completely agreed that it was what the Lord called us to do. And it was a real blessing that she and I and our two children were all able to be received and receive the sacrament of confirmation and receive First Communion all together as a family. All together as a family. So it was an incredible moment and a great blessing.
Oh, yeah. That's amazing. And we're so glad that you're home in the Catholic Church. My guest is Andrew Petiprin. And you can call in if you have a question for Andrew, 1-888-914-9149. Well, of course, you are the Fellow of Faith and Popular Culture at the Word on Fire Institute. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that because some people think, faith and pop culture don't really go too well together. You know, John the Apostle says in his first letter in 1 John 2:15, do not love the world, do not love anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love for the Father is not in them. Can you talk to me about the difference between loving the world and loving the world, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, absolutely, Cale. This is such an important distinction. And it's one that gets lost because it's not addressed enough, I don't think. I think that in some respects, we develop these binaries in our mind where we think, well, you know, either it's all about the faith or it's all about the world, you know. And the thing is, the gospel is for the world. You know, Christ's kingdom is not from this world, but it is for this world. Like the reign of Christ is meant for here. So what we're doing in the practice of our faith as Catholics is not just buying insurance for heaven, right? We are beginning our resurrection life even here, even now. Yeah. And so what that means with regard to the culture is not that we want to just baptize the culture. We are not at all interested in just sort of, you know, going along to get along. We're not just interested in sort of making ourselves more palatable or relevant to a culture, which we know can be very antagonistic to us at times. But what we are called to do, and sometimes it seems really naive and pointless, but we're called to it anyway, is to transform the culture.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, we can't be at war with it. We can't. In order not to be at war with the culture is not to say, again, that, well, we'll just sort of make a fake peace with it. No. What we do instead is understand that the war has already been won by Christ. What we have to do then is to carry out his work, which means sometimes we run into roadblocks, that there are definitely moments where we have to say, nope, we cannot participate in that. We can't watch that. We can't go be a part of that. We can't do that. And we do that with integrity. We do that with joy, as a matter of fact. But there are other moments when we can look at things the world offers and we can say, I think I see a place where I can walk across this bridge and meet you there for the sake of the gospel, for the sake of the salvation of your soul and of mine, and for the you know, deification of reality.
I really appreciate that point, Andrew. And I've talked about some of your reviews of television movies in the past, and not too long ago we had a discussion about the Apple TV program Ted Lasso, and you'd written some stuff about that for Word on Fire. And whenever I do talk about things like this, whether it's, we're going to talk about Midnight Mass in just a few minutes, whenever I talk about TVs, TV shows and movies, things like that from pop culture, I sometimes get messages from people that say, some people say, well, this is great that you're talking about this, and it helps me to kind of relate the gospel to some friends who may be watching this, and maybe there's some conversation points that I can use as I try to evangelize them. But I also get a lot of, I'll call it pearl clutching type messages that say, how could you possibly watch something like Ted Lasso? There was, you know, offensive language on the show, or this or that or the other thing. And obviously there are aspects of immorality in personal lives that are played out sometimes, and some of the stuff. How do you react to that? Have you been criticized that way before too? And how do you react to that, if so?
Yes, I certainly have been criticized that way before, and it's a fine line that I walk in my work, and all of us who are involved in media for sure. But I mean, even just us who consume media are always walking that fine line. What is edifying to me? What will draw me closer to Christ and His kingdom, and what will turn me away? Now, sometimes the difficult things, even the dark things, are things which are edifying for us in some way. Sometimes we interact with things that we, it turns out after the fact, ooh, that wasn't such a good idea. And, mm-hmm. and nonetheless, we're able to kind of, you know, build something upon it. Now, obviously we are, again, we're not just entirely world denying. So there are things that we can participate in, especially if we're mature in our faith and we're able to say, you know what, I can handle this. But there are some people who can't. Mm. And that's perfectly fine. You know, St. Augustine talks about how, you know, some Christians can exist their entire lives on milk, but some people need yeah. meat, you know? Yeah. So it's always this balance, right? No two Christians need the same exact things, apart from, of course, yeah. the sacraments which are given to us for our edification.
Yeah, I think that's true. And obviously, St. Paul talks about this in his letters, too. He talks about the strong and the weak and how we ought to look out for the weak. And some people, their faith can't handle it. It is going to be a scandal to them to the point where it could even cause them to perhaps fall into sin. And you have to kind of know where you're at and know where other people are, you know, on that front, too, and look out for them. And that's a really good point. So it is a little bit subjective in terms of what each person can handle. But just as a general point, and I'm sure you would say yes to this, but can we find truth, beauty, and goodness in film? Let's talk specifically about film, because I know that's a huge interest of yours in particular.
Oh, absolutely. We can find truth, beauty, and goodness, all the transcendentals, all of which point to the truth of Christ and his kingdom. We certainly can, absolutely. And this is not some newfangled modernist perspective. You know, the idea that there are seeds of the word sown into all kinds of things has an ancient pedigree. This is something yeah. that Justin Martyr talked about. Arguably, this is something you see in the words of our Lord himself and in St. Paul. So, absolutely we can. And so, you know, when you watch a movie from a director like Ingmar Bergman, who makes these sort of bleak Swedish Scandinavian philosophical pieces, well, you know, he's wrestling with all kinds of stuff himself. And there's some of his films are deeply disturbing, but there are others that speak profoundly to the needs of souls in every age. If you were to watch a film like The Seventh Seal, there's, you know, if you're a person of faith, there's no way that you could come away from it despairing of God's mercy. I mean, you would come away from it feeling very reassured of God's grace. And, you know, this is the case with so many other things as well. Now, it becomes more difficult as mores change in society, as, you know, as just kind of the basic standards continue to shift. I happen to believe it is becoming more and more difficult to locate those seeds of the word for a number of reasons. But I think those of us who are sort of in the trenches looking at these different offerings have a duty to our brothers and sisters in Christ to hold certain things up, you know? So Ted Lasso is a great example. Does everyone need to watch Ted Lasso? Absolutely not. If you're content in your faith with what you've got, with what you watch, with what you read and that sort of thing, then great. But if you choose to watch Ted Lasso, I absolutely think that a Christian could be edified by it, and a non-Christian even could see things in it that they could take away and probe more deeply, answers that they might find actually in the catechism, in the Bible, in the church, in her teachings.
Now, obviously, growing up as a Protestant, as an evangelical, and later as an Anglican, and now as a Catholic, you obviously have been deeply involved with reading Scripture. How has reading the narrative of Scripture, of God's action history, kind of informed the way that you look at film?
I think that every good film, with a few exceptions, is the story of death and resurrection. I think that it's no accident that really every good story, and this is something Aristotle talked about, right? That every good story is, in a sense, this sort of journey story, which is arguably, not arguably for us, but I mean, arguably to the world, best told in the Gospels, and before that too, in the Old Testament, in the story of God's covenant with Israel and all of the ups and downs that they take on their journey towards. Yeah. The coming of the Messiah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, to me, every good film, in a sense, can be mapped on to a scriptural narrative in some way, shape, or form.
Okay, well, you know, I did find out in doing research on you and this definitely made me want to invite you on the show even more, that one of your favorite films is Top Gun. And that automatically puts you in the good books of the Cale Clark Show, because, you know, we have a lot of Top Gun references on the show.
You two characters are going to Top Gun.
You better believe it. We absolutely are. And, hey, I should ask you, how do you find the gospel in Top Gun? That might be a show unto itself.
That's a tough one, but I would be happy to be I don't know which way to put it, Cale. I think since this is your show, I'll have to say I'd be happy to be your wingman anytime.
But
I mean, even in a movie like Top Gun, it's about redemption. I mean, it's a great redemption story. It's a bit cheesy in parts. It's a bit sad in parts. Goose's death, spoiler alert, is one of the saddest memories of my childhood. Yeah. But, you know, it's got rivalry. It's got, you know, it's got all these different things going on that certainly you're going to see in all the great stories of our faith. So, I'm a big fan of Top Gun. Looking forward to the sequel.
Yeah, Top Gun Maverick. It's finally going to come out at some point, and looking forward to seeing that in theaters. And I'm looking forward to our next segment with my guest today, Andrew Petteprin from Word on Fire. We're going to talk about an article that's going to drop tomorrow. You're going to get a sneak preview here on the Cale Clark Show. We're going to talk about Midnight Mass, the Netflix show that some people find really, really disturbing, and I'm a little scared to touch it myself. I'm not really a horror genre guy, but we'll talk about that and much more after the break. 1-888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back. My guest today is Andrew Petteprin, who's the venerable Fulton J. Sheen Fellow, Popular Culture at the Word on Fire Institute. He is also, I knew he was a smart guy because he went to Yale, he went to Oxford, but what really pushed it over the top for me was the fact that he is a fan of Top Gun. So he's my kind of guy. He's my kind of guy. And I don't want to talk about Top Gun right now. I do want to talk about another sensation on the small screen right now, which is Midnight Mass, Andrew. And right now it's the number one show on Netflix currently. And before we talk about this, I know what it's about. Full disclosure, though, I haven't watched it yet. I've been a little bit scared. I'm not a horror genre guy, but for those who maybe don't know what it's about, can you give us a brief synopsis?
Sure, Cale. Well, Midnight Mass is an interesting specimen of TV. It's really unique in that it's really, really churchy. And that's the case because the creator of it, Mike Flanagan, is very open about the fact that he was raised in a very serious Roman Catholic home, went to Catholic school, and he actually made several other things, including The Haunting of Hill House, The Haunting of Manor. He directed the sequel to The Shining called Dr. Sleep, and he's talked about how his interest in the horror genre is connected to the Catholic faith that he practiced as a child. Now, it's not clear to me to what degree he's still a faithful Catholic now, but his work saturated with sacramental imagery, with spiritual themes that are directly related to things that are important to us as Catholics. So go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, you've got an article that'll be dropping on the Word on Fire blog about the show tomorrow. So let me just ask you, how is the church depicted on the show?
Yeah, so the show is set on this place called Crockett Island, and it's this really down-and-out place, this fishing island that the fishing industry has been ruined by an oil spill, and there's only 100-some-odd people who live on the island to begin with. But it appears, when we enter the island with one of the characters, Riley Flynn, it appears that pretty much the entire island is Catholic. And at any rate, we don't see any other churches, but we see the Catholic Church, St. Patrick's Church. And most of the characters that are featured in the series have something to do with the church. And they have this beloved old pastor, Monsignor Pruitt, who has been their pastor for decades and decades. Everybody remembers him and loves him, but he's missing. He's gone off and he hasn't come back when the show begins. And we meet a new priest named Father Paul Hill, who kind of is this mysterious, much younger figure who comes to take his place. And you see right away that the makers of the show have clearly been to Mass. I mean, the priest at the altar looks just very much like what we would see in an ordinary Catholic church. you know, the people as they pray at home and they talk about the faith, it seems very natural and authentic. It doesn't seem like the kind of manufactured stuff that we too often see when, you know, Hollywood filmmakers want to throw in some plot detail about going to church or something like that. This is much different. But ultimately, it all goes in a very dark direction, which might not be beneficial to all Catholics, but I do think it will be of interest to many Catholics to see the way, or to compare and contrast, to appreciate, also to criticize certain things about the way the church is depicted very richly on this program.
Let me ask you this, Andrew. Does the Netflix show Midnight Mass, does it touch on clerical abuse at all?
Well, it doesn't directly deal with clerical abuse in the terms that we usually talk about it, as far as, you know, misconduct type things and, you know, the sorts of things that we're all so familiar with. But I think the entire show could be read as kind of a metaphor for clerical abuse. One of the themes that runs through the show is the mystery of this younger priest and this ongoing mystery of this older priest as well, who's been this beloved character in the community, where we find ourselves wondering just what is really going on in the lives of these men who have been tasked to look after the people of this place. And there's this female character named Bev Keane in the show, who is this sort of blunt moralizer, who, you know, she's the parish administrator. She's kind of a busybody. She's interested in everybody's business and that sort of thing. And she's somebody who you, without giving anything away, who you can see very early on is going to do just about anything to protect the reputation of a priest, who's going to do just about anything she can to sort of keep things status quo and not shake up things where they don't have to be. And then ultimately she is a very zealous character who follows in a direction that is bad for her and wreaks some havoc on the island itself. So yeah, I think if you're kind of interested in a metaphor for clerical abuse, there's a lot of it to find in Midnight Mass.
Okay. Well, I want to talk to you about something, and you're going to mention this in your article when it drops tomorrow. And you've already talked about the creator of Midnight Mass, Mike Flanagan. And in an interview that he had recently with another source, he talks about how sometime between his first communion and his confirmation, he asked his parents, quote, "If we're drinking blood and eating flesh to stay alive forever, are we not vampires?" There's a bit of a vampire element to the show, right?
There is, and you know, it's not a huge spoiler to say that there's that's an important part of the show, but I won't say too much so it doesn't reveal too much. But the point he's making about the vampire thing is really important, and it alludes to what I was saying before about how his fascination with Catholicism actually led him to a deeper appreciation of the horror genre, which then you know, gave him this career in horror film and television. And the way that I read it is like this, that if you are going to posit the existence of this darkness, this sort of like inverse of a sacrament, this inverse of a kind of feeding on body and blood for our salvation, then you are necessarily also positing the real one, the one that we believe in. And you know, this is something that you see very clearly in the older vampire stories, like the Hammer films that Christopher Lee starred in as Dracula, that, you know, the symbols of the church, sacramentals and things like that, are extremely effective against vampires.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, you know, the grace of God wins. And what is described, what is sort of understood in the end, is that the evil that vampires represent, especially this kind of like blood-sucking, parasitic evil, is it's just not comparable to the goodness of God. The goodness of God has no equal and opposite. God has no rivals. God has God is in no danger of defeat, and nor ultimately is his church. Now, the show Midnight Mass goes in a pretty dark direction, and there I could imagine there could be some people who would finish watching the show and think maybe there isn't so much hope for Catholics and the church, but I really see it otherwise. I really see that there's still this overriding message ultimately that that Christ promised to his church that it will persevere and that the gates of hell will not prevail against it, that that promise is true.
My guest is Andrew Petiprin. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Yeah, Andrew, I remember reading, I think it was Peter Crave 2 years ago, wrote about how Dracula and Christ are kind of, you know, Christ is the opposite of Dracula. Christ comes out of the tomb. He wants to give us his blood to drink and feed us with his blood, whereas Dracula, you know, he wants to take our blood, and he goes back into the tomb at night. I always found that to be a bit of a fascinating parallel. And I think that
that's
people
exactly
are really
right.
going to, yeah, yeah. And I think yeah. people are really going to like this article that's going to drop tomorrow on Word on Fire on the blog on Midnight Mass, the new Netflix series. And we're going to go to the phones right now. I've got a question for Andrew, and Dee Dee from Phoenix is on the line. Hi, Dee Dee. What's your question for Andrew Petiprin?
Hi, Andrew. My question is this. Cardinal Newman is famous for the motto, heart speaks unto heart. What does he mean by that?
That's a great question, Dee Dee. What I think he means by it, now, I mean, the idea of heart, we are, we're predisposed to think of heart as synonymous with emotion or feeling. But to someone like Cardinal Newman, St. John Henry Newman, I think that he is thinking of heart in this deep biblical sense. And this was something that he would have gained from his Anglican formation as well, where he would have prayed as an Anglican priest, this prayer called the Collect for Purity, where he would pray every time, Almighty God, unto whom all hearts are open, all desires known, and unto whom no secrets are hid, cleanse the thoughts of our hearts by the inspiration of thy Holy Spirit. So to him, the idea of the heart was the deepest seat of your being. It was the will, it was the intellect, it was your feelings, it was your personality, it was everything about your God-givenness. And so I think when his motto is, heart speaks to heart, I think that's something he gets from St. Augustine, that it's just this idea of that the Lord in his reality speaks to us in the depth of our reality, in who we really and truly are.
Mm. I love that answer, Andrew. That's fantastic. Hey, let me ask you this. Where can people find you on the web if they want to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. You can find me at wordonfire.org. You can dig into the website a little bit there and find our blog, find our writings. You can find me, a bio of me, and my writings there. You can also look at my personal website, andrewpetiprin.com, and find me on Twitter at andrewpetiprin.
And I have one last question for you, Andrew. How do you have time? You've got a couple kids. How do you have time to watch all this stuff? I can't even possibly. I'm like, how does he do it? He watches all these films, these series. Man, wait. I guess it's part of your job. Maybe you can do it during work hours. I don't know, but
I am fortunate, Cale, that I get to do some of it on the clock, to be sure. But
that's
I have to be
nice.
Very judicious because you can't
yeah,
watch
absolutely.
Everything.
You can't see everything, but hey, you can maybe whet our appetite for a few things that might be able to inform how our faith can interact with popular culture. My guest today has been the fellow of popular culture at the Word on Fire Institute, Andrew Petiprin. Andrew, it was great to run you down. Great to have this conversation. It's been long in the making. God bless you, and thanks for coming on today.
Thanks, Cale.
You got it. Wow, what a great guy. I've been looking forward to that chat for so long. Producer Lucas, we were finally able to set it up. And yeah, he's just got such great insight on conversion, on relating faith and culture. And that's really what we've got to do. In some ways, have the Bible in one hand, the catechism in one hand, you know, and the New York Times in the other, or you know, maybe a remote control. And that's where people are living today. They're living in a media-saturated world, and we need to build some hooks in there so they can find Christ and bring all things under his control. And that's really what he's going to do, and we're going to be a part of it. And you are a part of it, listening to Relevant Radio. This is Cale Clark for producer Lucas Holt. I want to thank you for taking the time today. Patrick Alog took your calls. Father Matthew Spencer sitting in for Timory up next. Take it away, Michaela. See you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.